Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you not got the script?
No.
Right.
I realized just as the theme music was playing that there's probably a script somewhere.
Yeah. Do you want to have a hunt about? Right, listeners, before we start,
Hang on, I'd like to say something before we start.
Yes, can
I ask if you're absolutely 100% sure that we are recording?
Yes, I am, yes.
Really?
Yes.
Beyond any doubt?
Beyond any doubt.
Okay.
Listeners, this is the first time for recording for Mr. Newbie today. It is the second time for Lucy. For at 1 o'clock, Harriet and Lucy spent an hour and a half recording brilliant shafts of wit, etc. for you. But owing to the fact that Lucy had her contact lenses in different eyes, different her own eyes, not anyone else's eyes, but the wrong ones, she had not pressed record properly. So we recorded 5 seconds, which would have been shortchanging you, we felt. So we are now doing it all over again. Harriet's had to go off and go skiing again, probably. So it's now me and Jeff. So sorry about that. I don't mean sorry about that, it's me and Jeff. I mean...
Charming.
Sorry for me. I'm saying sorry for me, basically, that I'm now having to do the whole thing all over again.
Yes.
Anyway.
And I've had to listen to the last three episodes of The Archers in a real hurry.
Yes.
What the listeners possibly don't understand is that my usual level of cheerful incompetence is actually the result of many weeks of back-breaking work before I appear in this thing. And without those weeks of back-breaking work, in fact, with about 45 minutes of half-assed work, I'm going to be an absolute catastrophe. So,
and as he is sulking because he's had to do this at last
minute, I am sulking a bit.
He has declared his intention of being good and drunk throughout this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So he's on his third bottle of beer now?
I'm on a glass of wine now. I've had two beers and then I'm on a glass of wine.
Really? Yeah. You do it so fast.
Yes, well, no, when I'm on a mission.
Okay, fair dues.
But it does mean that I can't find the script now. Okay. So I'm afraid that's like all on you.
Okay. Well, welcome to Ambridge on the Couch, ladies and gentlemen. An in-depth look at The Archers with me, Harriet Carmichael, Jeff Thomas, Lucy V. Freeman, and our executive Cooper, Director Cooper, who is the only one who isn't A, drunk, or B, has messed up today. In fact, he's had a very good day today, Cooper.
No, I think we need to give Coopy more responsibility, generally speaking.
Yes, he's the most reliable one of all of us.
He is.
Thinking about it. And now it's the monologue. Would you like me to do the monologue, Jeff?
Yes, please. Feel free. Yes.
Right. This week was brought to you by very peculiar things happening really, really quickly. The whole week had a triple espresso and I have whiplash. Firstly, we had Jimus, who unwisely started comparing his one-man vigilante battle not to have an electric vehicle charging station at Brookfield with the Black Panther movement, which I thought was going it a bit. Things went from naught to bonkers in 2.5 minutes. One moment he was asking David if he'd very kindly like to sign a petition, please, thank you very much. And the next, David was chucking bales of hay at him with a forklift while Jim wore a fluorescent green top hat for reasons which were never really explained. In retaliation, Jim has staged a one-man sit-in at what Brookfield endearingly keeps referring to as the B&B, when what they mean is the room. The way they carry on, it sounds like a boutique hotel with a bean-to-cup coffee machine and a turn-down service, rather than one scruffy bedroom with a Garfield poster on the wall hiding the damp bit and everyone queuing on the landing for the bog. Anyway... staging a sit-in at a bed and breakfast does not sound very Black Panther-y to me. You know, up a tree or in a tent on the M11, fair dues, but sitting in a chintzy bedroom while someone brings you cups of tea and flapjacks, hardly green and common, is it? Anyway, the whole situation was resolved, as all of them are at the moment, by someone calling in a female horror bin. Voila! Protest over. Maybe someone could give Macron Chelsea's number. Alice and Adam were reluctant to look after Daddy Dearest until they both caught on to the fact that it might result in unlimited babysitting opportunities, so immediately then started squabbling over who was going to have him. Brian said quite sensibly that he'd rather die than live with either of them, and was going to live in Custard Cottage instead, where he could dress up in Jenny's clothes and drink whiskey in peace. Actually, he can't dress up as Jenny anymore, as he's given all her clothes to Joy, who I imagined tripping around the village in a pair of court shoes two sizes too big and wearing the full twin set and pearls to put the bins out. Far be it from me to condemn a writer for writing a character that goes through every gay trope in the world. And maybe it's the case that as we have Adam, the world's least flamboyant gay man, we also have veterinary nurse Paul, who is what I think is technically called screaming. First of all, he hit on harassment, asked him about Amdram, invited him to go to a musical, and then volunteered for Eurovision celebrations. Short of shouting, ooh, I do love a man in uniform, ducky, things couldn't have been more 70s, really, but at least Paul is fun. He even managed to get Alistair and Jakob in an escape room, which I was hoping might turn out to be an S&M dungeon, and a big bloke called Horst was going to appear in a leather thong holding pliers. But no! Alistair and Jakob plodded through hieroglyphics and mirror writing, while Paul presumably sat in the corner painting his nails. You'd think, wouldn't you, really, that if you were going to have a festival in Borsetshire, which has a population of about 7, you wouldn't have it midweek when everyone's, you know, at work. Well, yeah. Clary and Susan managed to find two of them on consecutive days, no less. I take it all back about Ian not making enough money with his pizza van. If Borchester even has festivals on a wet Wednesday in March, he must be coining it in. They had a lovely time knitting one day and fiddling the next. Ned's son Derek even took a photo of Clary fiddling, which I thought was a little impertinent. But it did give us an excuse to return to some good old Grundy mix-up. I thought you was doing something illegal, Eddie. No, love, I have got you a second-hand pergola and painted it green. I liked it. It was nostalgic. But again, the whole storyline was started and done with in the space of 20 minutes. The most exciting part of the week was Debbie's brief but emphatic return. Basically, we got what should have been a narrative arc stretched over 3 months, squished into the space of 3 episodes. It consisted basically of, she's back. I love you, Dad. I hate you, Dad. You killed Mum. Okay, sorry. I love you, Dad. Yes, I might come back. No, actually, I won't. Bye! We spent a good 10 minutes of her time with us listening to her pack and unpack. We know nothing of her life in Hungary. Absolutely zip. Where does she live? Does she speak Hungarian? Is she making any money? Does she have a significant other? I'm not particularly bothered about gender. Just knowing that she's getting some would be helpful. What does she eat in Hungary? Goulash, coffee and cake at 4 p.m. But then she ought to be the size of a house, and she doesn't sound the size of a house. I don't know. It was like having a frustratingly quick glimpse of a friend you haven't seen for ages on the up escalator of the Victoria line while you're going down, and you both signal madly to each other about meeting the other end, and then it all gets too embarrassing and one of you gets swallowed up in the crowd. Anyway, nice to see you, Debbie. Keep well. Love to the family. Oh, the end.
That was a bit wistful at the end there. It's not normally we get pathos as well as humour.
Well, I thought it was quite sad. I'd been looking forward to seeing her so much. Yes. And then she was there, and then there she was gone. And
well, is she though? Will she not be there next week, do you think?
No, she's definitely gone. Because I got all excited, didn't I?
Have you checked the
cast
list?
Yes. She's probably filming something amazing in Hollywood, isn't she? Not tiddling around in Birmingham, staying in a travel lodge and recording.
No.
No. Because I got all excited, didn't I? And so when you were podding the beans, I said to you, oh, did you hear? She, you know, Brian's asked her, and I said, she might come back. And you said, no, she won't. And then you were right.
No, she won't. Exactly. Yes, I was right. So this is the first time I've met Debbie. I don't know when the last time she was in the show was, but it's got to have been at sort of...
Yonks ago.
Three years ago, at least, I would say.
Yeah.
And she was talking about her former significant other, Simon.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously he's not a good egg by the sounds of things.
No, he is. Ooh, he's the villain. And he was having affairs all over the shop, and
Did she move to Hungary with him? Did she move to Hungary?
No, I believe she moved to Hungary to get away from him.
Right. Okay.
I think he's Canadian.
But they're normally so nice Canadians.
I know. Well, he's the exception that proves the rule.
That is a shame.
He was really, really. He was a. Oh, Cooper's eating my gardening shoe, and I can't. Cooper, stop it. I think she moved to get away from him, and him breaking up with her, or her finding out all about the infidelity, has sort of happened at the same time as finding out about her dad and Siobhan and Rory and everything.
Yeah, well, she said exactly that, didn't she?
She said
it was all, you know, it all happened at the same time.
He was an absolute shit, though, Simon, and I think he hurt her. I think he bashed her one. Yeah. Ooh. But she didn't. She took it once, and then that was it. She was off.
Okay.
I think. Gosh, I can't remember that.
I'm sure our listeners can remember. So yes. Perhaps they could.
Please fill in gaps, listeners. Exactly. Thanking you.
So she's farming in Hungary, right?
Yes.
But that is all we know.
All we know. And you know, it was. It was just Adam following her around going, "Ooh, Dibby, ooh, I'll go and see." We've had three times now, we've had somebody leaving. Rory was packing and Rory was packing and Jenny, darling, came up to see him. Rory was packing and Brian came to see him. Brian was at home and Rory went to see him just before he left. It's like a device that they've used far too often now, right on the verge of somebody leaving. When everyone's going, you can't leave it like this, and then the person turns up on the doorstep. It just keeps happening.
Well, and actually, what is actually happening is that they're saying you can't leave it with the truth. Because I mean, Debbie, that's why it took Debbie two bites of the apple.
Yeah.
To apologise to Brian.
Yeah, because the first
time
she tried,
she was actually. You know, she realised that she meant everything she'd said, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and knowing you shouldn't have said it isn't the same as...
No, right.
You know, and regretting saying it is also not the same as...
Yes. As I'm not, sorry I said it is not the same thing as I was wrong.
I'm sorry, yeah.
And I, honestly, the older I get, the more I become convinced of the value of... saying, I also actually having lived in the Netherlands for 20 years will push you in this direction. saying whatever the hell it is that that you want to say or that you've got to say, and dealing with the consequences, whatever they may be.
Yeah.
And I think to a decent extent, that's what Debbie did actually. Mm. And she's smoothed over the worst of it with Brian there. But had she said, yes, I'll come back to Ambridge and... That would have been a different story, but she knows that she can't.
Just for a minute, though, Harriet said as well, her heart went, oh, you know, we all thought, oh, yes, she's no, coming even back. I did. And then,
even I did.
Is she out?
And I've never met her before. that would have been nice because, you know, she's... it's a funny thing, isn't it?
Well, let's hope so.
People who...
Whatever it is.
Or at least I'm speaking for myself here, but I don't think I'm alone in this. So it is a little, when you get somebody, it's a bit like Benedict Cumberbatch in Cabin Pressure.
Yeah.
When you get somebody who's been in the Archers and then they've gone on and done other things and become, because I think probably, you know, 55 of the 60 million people in the United Kingdom have no, 5 million is not nothing, but there's still 55 million people who have no idea who Debbie
Archer is. It's when you become face famous.
Debbie Archer, Debbie...
It's when you become face famous, isn't it?
Yes, right.
So,
And we all have a little bit of pride when that happens. A little bit of paternal, maternal...
Yes,
oh,
you
hasn't
started
she done
with
well?
Us. Yes, yeah.
Exactly, you started with us, exactly. And for then, like Benedict Cumberbatch did with Cabin Pressure, for Debbie to come back...
Yeah.
Having made it in the big bad world, to then come back, that really would be an endorsement of the Archers.
Yes, yes, like it needs an endorsement.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does, obviously it doesn't, but then there's, you know, 55 million people who,
yeah,
probably don't even know that it exists.
Yeah, So, what do you think of Paul then, Jeff?
Honestly. I mean, you know exactly what I think of Paul because you've heard me moaning about it in the car all week. I thought you made a good point about Adam, actually, who is the most sort of alpha hetero gay man you can possibly imagine. Yeah.
He's managed to get all the boring bits of being a straight man.
You'd think, exactly. I mean, it always seems to me, at least, that my gay friends, whatever we're doing, are having more fun than I am doing it. And Adam is the exception to that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's having much less fun, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
In general terms, I'm all for it, but I just don't think that Paul's been done particularly well.
Well, you and I, when we were driving along, we were listening to that episode of the when he was chatting up harassment before he realised he was straight. And he said, you know, he said, bloody hell, he's going to start saying, I like musicals in a minute. No, and then the next beat, he said, do you like musical theatre? I thought, my God, can we get any more cliched? Yeah, I mean, I know, if anyone should be not mocking gay stereotypes, it's us, but
it was all a bit hoary, wasn't it? Not great. And I hope so. It seems as though Paul is going to be sticking around for a while, to everybody's surprise, including Denise's, presumably, because it means now that she's not coming back, right?
Not for a little bit. Did you hear how disappointed poor old Alistair sounded?
He did. He did.
Oh.
Poor Alistair. That is a bit sad, actually.
Do you think he had it on one of those wall planners with like a little pink sticker and a heart?
Circled in mustard on his calendar, yes.
And glitter on it and stuff and a heart, pink heart.
Still, you know, if he plays his cards right with Paul, possibly. Do we know that Alistair is decidedly heterosexual? Or?
Well, you'd think Shula would have put him off, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah, God, Jesus, that doesn't change the way you think about these things, and nothing will.
Moving on to the thorny issue of the week, namely, Jimus and his one-man vigilante protest.
We're going to have a fight about this now, aren't
we? I think Jimus is being an arse.
I think Jimus is being brilliant.
I don't just think Jimus is being an arse because I like David. David was also behaving like an arse.
Nobody likes David. You don't like David.
I fancy David. I've always fancied David.
Well, this changes everything.
See ya! Anyway, I do...
So you see, when you wake up and tell me about the dream you just had about Jeremy Clarkson, you see, I can kind of see that.
Can you?
All right. Yes, I can.
More than I can.
He's charismatic. He's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's charismatic. He's clearly got something. But David.
VD, probably. But anyway.
Yes, he's clearly got. Yes, he's got several things. But David.
It's the actor is really not. He's a really nice man.
Oh, okay. So it's the actor rather than the character.
No, and both.
What?
Hang on, I'm just going to open the door because Koopy wants to go out. Oh no, Koopy's got out. That's good. When I think about David, which I do sometimes, then David looks in my head exactly like Tim Bentinck.
Okay.
So he's one of the ones that looks exactly like I think he looks.
Uh-huh.
And
is that not the case for all the characters? Because I've got nothing else to go on. So when we have a new character in The Archers, I go straight to the interwebs and look up the actor.
No,
and then
I
that's
never
what
do.
They
I
look
don't,
like.
I don't want to know, but it's only because I've met him. That's what I know what he looks like.
Oh, I see.
Yes. So.
It's all coming out now.
And he is just what. And there's, you know, he's just a really, really nice bloke.
Okay.
and I think David is but a bit of an arse, but that's because he's been spoiled and indulged.
Oh, he's dull. He's so dull.
Yeah. But I think that Jimus is being... He didn't have a go at Pat and Tony when they sold off all the land for the housing thing. It was not Dave. David had no idea what he was... He was selling it for recreational use. He had no idea what was going to be built. Jimus is picking on him because he can't find the real person.
Exactly. And that's the whole point.
Yeah, but he should be. Then he should be asking for help rather than just being stupid and petulant and attention-seeking.
He did ask for help.
No, he just said, sign my petition.
Yes, and David didn't.
Mm. Only because he didn't want to get involved, because it would put David in an embarrassing situation.
The first thing that Jim did was to ask for help, and David said, no, thank you, I won't do that.
Because I think,
yes, well, no, because he's, you know, obviously he's trying to play both sides a bit, which I don't blame him for, I suppose. I'd probably be doing the same thing if I were in his shoes, but it's not the honourable thing to do. And Jim is just trying to get to the bottom of exactly what is happening. And I think that's entirely reasonable and bloody good for him. I'm glad somebody's doing it.
But he's
mostly because I want to see Justin get publicly shamed.
Well,
yes, banished from the village forever and ever.
Pilloried and cow pats on his head. But I think that they should be... if he wants... He doesn't seem to be focusing in his efforts on finding... who it is, because David doesn't know. He's just picking on Brookfield. And I don't know why. He's just doing that silly feudal...
Well, where else is he going to start?
Well, he should start with a bloody planning committee. He should do the research, not just lash out at the nearest person.
No, but I think he's... I see what you're saying. But I do think that Jim had David signed the petition... And said, yes, I think I agree there's something a bit dodgy going on here. And I would also like to know what it is. Then Jim wouldn't be making David's life a misery now.
I'm just trying to imagine that. What would happen if David had signed the petition? What would Jim now be doing?
Well, I think then possibly, indeed, the planning committee would be his next port of call. With David's signature to say, look, come on, even the...
Would normally be all over this shit, but whether it's because maybe the actor is having a bit of time off because of her on Mike husband has sadly died, or whether she's not all over it because it's a green issue and she's very pro eco things.
Well, you'd expect Krusty to be tearing her hair out about this as well, wouldn't you?
No, because it's a green initiative.
Well, is it though?
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's a double-edged sword because people want the... Harriet said it's NIMBYism. People want green eco things. But listen to this email. This is from... Where has it gone? Terry White, who said, this charger station protest is a load of Montbelliard mustard, Hereford honey. It's crap. Why aren't Jim and the Booths concentrating their action on the planning committee? Are we really expected to believe that the council has already given the go-ahead in double-quick time without anyone in and around the village noticing any of the statutory notices attached to telegraph poles, village hall notice board?
But I don't. They haven't been given the go-ahead yet, have
they? Or that any such planning hearing would have been held so soon. And doesn't Dopey David have a case? Commercial land is worth much more than recreational or domestic grazing. If he'd been aware of the true purpose of the purchase, he'd have surely been able to charge a much higher price. Brookfield has effectively been robbed.
Yes.
Yes.
So, but it's why I don't really understand why David is so reluctant to have a dig around and see what's actually happened.
I think he just doesn't want to get involved. I think he just, because he knows it's going to be controversial.
The Archers, of course, is famous for being packed with characters who don't want to get involved.
Yes.
In the goings on in the village. Everybody is 73 years of people just minding their own business. Letting bygones be bygones and letting people get on with their lives.
Not holding grudges, not interfering. No, nothing to do with me. Well, a lady who I can't... Daisy.
Hello, a lady. Hello, Daisy.
Has sent a message saying, my sister and brother-in-law, who are farmers, sold some land for an electric charging forecourt. It looks just like a petrol one, just without petrol. This one is near a busy A road. There's now a small industrial park next to it, and there's a Tesco over the road. It's very easily accessible, and just down the road from Stansted Airport. See, that makes sense. That is where you want a charging station, not in the middle of a village that you would only be going to for nothing. You wouldn't be going to it.
There will be presumably people going through it.
But not really.
I mean, I think, yeah, okay. You can make a case, certainly, that if there is not currently a petrol station, then there probably doesn't need to be an electric charging station either.
Arda was the only one in the village that's got an electric car.
No, but I mean, they've made this point on the show. The idea is, and I think this is ludicrously optimistic, but nonetheless, the idea is that they will stop selling new petrol and diesel cars. In fact, in the Netherlands, diesel cars are already basically...
Oh, yeah, they said it's in the next 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't... Yeah. Well, you can't... There are already
lots
of places that you cannot go in a diesel car in the Netherlands.
Yeah, well, there is here. We've got the ULEZ thing.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the next 7 years, they're going to phase out new diesel and petrol cars.
Right.
And everybody will be driving... What I think is probably going to happen is that you'll have to have a hybrid at least.
Mm.
So, but that is going to mean that where there are now petrol stations, there will need to be electric.
There is a petrol station on the bypass because that's where Alice went to buy her boozy woozy.
And of course, the sensible thing to do would simply be to put on overchargers where the existing petrol stations are. The problem you've got is that filling a car with petrol takes a minute or a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And until you can improve the technology of charging a car battery, you don't have the same turnover.
It's 40
minutes, so you need a lot more space. You need a lot more, I don't know what they're called, pumps, chargers.
Right.
Yeah.
To service the same number of cars.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as simple as just replacing the petrol stations.
I'm looking forward to the Grundys producing the Grundy world of charging, where they just, you know, they just put up a load of extension leads or something and then charge people 15 quid a pop.
Yes, or there'll be a special kind of electricity that they're putting in.
Magic electricity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Perhaps electricity that they're distilling from, I don't know,
cider.
Cow pat, yes, cider or turkey. They turkey poo.
They turkeys. I liked very much Georgie sucking up to Grandma and Nana and telling them they both smelled of cheese and insisting that they then lobby on his behalf to let him have his party.
He's quite the little charmer, isn't he? When he
he's a little shit. I can't believe Georgie's got any friends to come to a party.
No, this did cross my mind. I'm not aware, other than Brad.
Yeah.
And even that's tenuous.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of George having any friends.
No.
It's going to be, you know, a relatively small scale party, I think.
It's going to be George, Nana and Grandma, I think.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's a little arse. I do really, really dislike George.
I was a bit disappointed with how easily Clary and Susan both...
They both do it. It's the granddads know what he's like. Neil and Eddie are both...
They're both the same.
Yeah, but well, Neil
isn't. That's a bit unkind to Neil, isn't it?
But he's very engaging, my Neil.
Yeah.
They've both got George's number. But yeah, Clary and Susan are just... It takes two sentences of bullshit and they're like, oh, he's a good boy, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I know grandmothers are supposed to be indulgent, but they're not stupid.
No.
Really not. It's a bit. That's a bit patronising, I think.
I thought so too.
Yeah. But I'm enjoying the window very much. It's so
good
much
Lord.
More interesting than the stained glass window.
It's, no, it definitely is, but I...
Cooper, no. Uh-uh.
Without wishing to spoil things, this week's sketch is based around the wonders of the window.
Yeah.
And we discussed after having written and recorded the sketch, just how close it was
to what actually happened.
To the actual, to what's actually happening with this window. It is almost, it is comedy.
Yeah.
And Clary in particular is, you know, having kittens about. I mean, honestly, how many people do they think are going to go?
I know. To and stare this at cheese two farm? Women
right,
in
exactly.
funny hats.
And if they did, who's gonna say anything?
I know.
Even I'd, you know, be embarrassed into shutting up, I think, in those circumstances.
Yeah.
And I waved at a man on a boat the other day.
And then was mortified when he waved back.
Can I just correct
the
record on this?
He waved at you first. Didn't
he did wave at me first, indeed. But then, so this really made me laugh. So this was on the deck of HMS Diamond, parked. Is that the proper naval word? Parked.
Yep.
Yes. Parked in Portsmouth Harbour the other day, and as we chuffed past on our big old car ferry, this sailor. On the deck of HMS Diamond, waved. And I couldn't quite believe that he was waving at us, but I waved back anyway, at which point he punched the air and waved some more. Because he was... and that then I did get a little bit embarrassed, actually, that I, you know... Because I didn't actually think he'd been waving at me at all, but it turned out he had.
Paul would have waved.
I'm quite, yes, no, Paul would have been all over that, especially with the sailor.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, that's another Merchant Navy, another tick.
Yeah.
Friend of Gordon's, another one.
Dear, yes, there are still a few tropes that they haven't dug up for.
Well, I'm Everard in it next week. Shut that door. Steve Barry says, regarding Mothering Sunday, I was taught many years ago now, the original tradition is supposed to have been that young sons and daughters, either apprenticed or working in service, were allowed to go home to their families for some mothering. The presents tradition started because as they walked home, they would pick posies of spring flowers for their mothers.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. Regarding Harriet's theory about leaving children to sort themselves out, having just listened to three children, all of them parents themselves, who needed their mother to leave a list from beyond the grave to sort out whose teeth were whose, I don't really fancy her chances with this. Best of luck, Harriet, he says. Yes. That wasn't the one I wanted to read. The one I wanted to read was this one. I did want to read it.
Poor Steve.
I'm
very glad that you read Steve's email. Yes. I enjoyed it very much. Very informative. Thank you, Steve. I enjoyed it.
This is from Tom of Finland, who says, the charging station. Why are none of the local businesses seeing it as potentially a great opportunity to open new units and expand? Surely rather than worrying about a new cafe opening and destroying you, you'd find out who's building the thing and approach them about acquiring the lease. It's essentially a green enterprise, so surely you'd think whoever is behind it would be all for local businesses being involved. Good point.
Are we talking about upselling, I believe, is the...
We're saying, like the Bridge Farm, saying, OK, can we have selling cheese sandwiches or something?
Right, so while people are sitting there for 40 minutes waiting for their
electric
car to charge...
Exactly, go and have a coffee and a Bridge Farm cheese sarnie.
Yeah.
Or for £27.99, or...
But do we think this is going to happen?
The Bridge Farm tea room or something. No, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, because... You know, if it takes you 40 minutes to charge your car every time you need to charge your car, you're, particularly with the price of things, hashtag these days, you're not going to go and get a cheese sandwich and a cup of coffee every time you need to charge the car, are you? You're probably going to have a nap, actually. That's what I do.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine this is a huge commercial opportunity.
No, but it's... But nobody's thinking about it. You know, if you think about them... But electric cars at the moment are acquired by AB1s and 2s, so they've got a bit of disposable income. They like organic things. They like, you know, they've gone to the trouble of having an electric car, so they are thinking about the environment. So surely sustainable enterprises would be up their cup of tea and they'd be willing to, you know, do it, wouldn't they? Anyway, he also says, Seren and Nova, when Pat, or what do we call them now? I've forgotten. Something in Shitstorm, I've forgotten. When Pat and Tony found out about the modelling idea, they were worried about how the children might feel when they get older and find out their pictures are out there for all to see. Why has nobody applied the same logic to the damn window? Very true. The stained glass window. And finally...
But I don't think anybody's...
What?
Well, it's not quite the same, is it?
Yes! Okay. And finally, why doesn't Oliver... Because that thing's going to be there in perpetuity, isn't it? And finally, why doesn't Oliver get any credit for being possibly the shrewdest business mind in all of Borchester? I'm sure when he sold Grey Gables, he actually retained a 40% stake, which actually, come to think of it, makes you wonder more about the calibre of the people Ardil works for. I have utterly failed in being concise, he says. Well, don't worry, stop now anyway. But thank you.
Where's Will?
In the garden.
Oh, is he? I thought he was next to me.
No, he's here trying to stop Coopy whining. Yes, and he also says, when Helen announced her pointless plans for the dairy, it was quite the coincidence that it was Lillian who just so happened to know a builder who could start the following week. I don't think Lillian is the grey man, but she could be masquerading as the shadowy Eastern European Victoria. She's got form when it comes to the sale of horses. At this point, my theory as to who the actual grey man is has moved on to a distant member of the Pargeter family who has never given up on the old ways. Thank you very much, Tom. I like that.
Ooh.
Modern slavery, linking back to the...
No, I mean, I've had Lillian down as a modern slaver since the beginning,
since day
I have
one.
To say.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I have, yeah.
Shel Harris got very, very overexcited when she heard Jill.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
In the old people's home, and said, thank God, I was worrying they were going to unalive her and we'd never hear from her again. I excitedly squeaked at my car while listening on Wednesday.
Not hooted.
Woo! And...
We were discussing this and she does sound... She's not...
No, she sounds like she ought to be in there, not visiting. Keep moving, Jill, let's stop taking. People shouldn't be surprised... This is Terry White. People shouldn't be surprised that Jill was just wandering around the laurels as if she owned the place. Having, one imagines, visited Christine several times a week for several years, she probably has the run of the kitchen with a veto on the menus. What I'd like to know, though, is how can Sykesy, a lifelong agricultural labourer, afford the laurels when Christine needed financial help after Matt Conter? Well, for once, I actually know the answer to that, Terry. Unbelievably. Oh. When we first met Sykesy, he mentioned that his brother had owned a farm in, had inherited the main farm, his family's farm, in Borchester, and he was the one who had paid for Sykesy to remain in the laurels.
Sykesy doesn't sound like a man who needs to be in a home, does he?
Not at all, no. I mean, maybe he's a bit wobbly on his pins or something.
I don't know how old Carrot is.
No.
He's mid-70s. I think he's probably ages with my parents because
when they were watching them, they were sort of the same age.
Right, you see, my parents met as my dad was president, so he was a soldier, and he was based in Detmold in Germany in the early 70s, and he was president of the Forces Folk Federation out there.
The
FFF. The FFF, exactly. Because he played guitar and sang, and my mother was got herself a job in the British Army schools. She was a teacher, and she got herself a job in the British Army schools, also in Detmold, and she also played guitar. So my mother is a tiny, tiny little person. I am quite big, and she is very definitely not. She's not even 5 foot these days, I don't think. But she nonetheless had this enormous 12-string guitar that she used to lug around with her. And that was where they met. And it was people like Jasper Carrot and Mike Harding and probably not Billy Connolly by those.
No.
Even he was too successful for that kind
yeah.
of thing. But that breed of yeah. folk singer stroke yeah. comedian, who were actually, a lot of them had started as pure folk singers but then become...
Yeah,
as sort of they'd done it, you know, they'd had a line of patter and so on, yeah. and then, but it then became more about the comedy.
Well, it's like Humphrey Littleton started; it was a jazz trumpeter, and then he'd just natter to fill in the gaps between
yeah.
set changes right. and things,
exactly.
and then the natter took over the
right, and the yeah. people who are good at that get you
yeah.
know, get recognised
yeah,
for
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
People want more.
Yeah.
Anyway, my original point was that you know people like Jasper Carrot and Mike Harding and Hamish Imlach and. They were the guys that Mum and Dad were booking to come out and
so they must have been all of an age. So
give or take, exactly. So so I would say that I could of course look this up in an instant, but I'm going to guess that Jasper Carrot is in his mid to late 70s.
Right.
And still sounds entirely
yeah.
compos mentis and
yeah.
shouldn't be anywhere near at home.
Yeah. Do you remember Michael Gorman the Doorman? Yes, the celebrity librarian. You don't.
No,
anyway,
I don't, no.
Michael Gorman says my wife has acquired the Aldridge Cookery Book.
Oh no! Right, sorry.
Yes,
it's right, yes, I do know yes. exactly who you're talking about.
Yes,
I thought you meant on the show.
No.
Right. No. Okay. Yes.
My wife has acquired the Aldridge Cookery Book. I was pleasantly surprised to see it was not the W.I. Tat I had imagined, but one of David and Charles's lovely productions. Anyway, you may have seen it, but if not, he sent me a picture of it, which I will put on the Twitters.
Ooh.
And it is Jennifer Aldridge's cookbook, produced in 1990-something.
This is a real thing.
Yeah. Delicious recipes from your favourite Ambridge characters.
Hee-hee.
And Kerry Davis emailed us last week and said that the reason that he had picked lamb, leek and prune pie as the centrepiece for Jennifer's funeral was because that was one of the recipes
isn't that
from
nice.
And he wanted to do it as a tribute to her.
Isn't that nice?
It is nice. It still sounds utterly revolting.
No, I mean, I wouldn't eat that, but I
listen
find
to
it's
this.
Funny.
Try and visualise this, right?
Yeah.
Or tastualise this.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Sunflower oil, onion, best neck fillet. I'm starving now.
Which, by the way...
has really
Good
got up
Lord.
In price. Yes, not going
I
down
bought
that.
Neck fillets
oh, God,
the other day, and I mean, you were there. There was a scene.
There was a
there?
Scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
The price.
Yes.
Neck is supposed to be, you know, it's one of the
Scrag
bits
end.
People don't want.
Yes. Anyway.
Good Lord.
Neck fillet, 2 plump garlic cloves, 3 ounces of prunes, rosemary, leek, and salt and pepper.
We were doing so well until the... And I know prunes is one of those things, more often with pork, though, I think, isn't it?
Is it?
Pork and prune, I think. But, so you know better than most people, Lucy, how much I enjoy dried fruit. And meat, but lamb and apricot normally, isn't it?
Well, that's Moroccan, isn't it?
Right, but I've also had sort of... I'm sure Delia has a lamb and apricot recipe, for instance. But you start putting dried fruit in with meat, and I get really a bit queasy about it.
Yeah.
I
don't. Well, it reminds me of those 70s curries where people put raisins in them. Oh, God.
Actually, I didn't have a problem with that.
Oh.
We used to go to officers' mess curry lunches on Sundays. And there was fruit all over the shop, but it was fine.
I cannot bear it. It makes my stomach. I'm quite a, you know, I'm not. I'm quite a robust eater. But oh my God, that makes my stomach do a backflip. Oh, disgusting! And rice salad, 70s rice salad that used to have cold.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
sweet corn in and the old bloody raisin.
Raisins
for
yeah.
no. It was like sick. for
and,
no
and not in any way seasoned either.
No, so just like, it was like managed to be sweet, bland, and disgusting all at once. Yeah. Oh.
No, no, no. So next time, I've just remembered, they didn't, in the officers' mess curry lunches, they wouldn't put fruit in the curry, but they'd have big bowls of raisins and desiccated coconut and...
Desiccated coconut?
Yeah, various other things that you could then sprinkle on the top of your curry when you served yourself.
So you have a portion of curry and then put trifle on top of it?
Yeah, basically yeah.
Oh! Yeah. Oh, that's minging.
Trying to think what else they had. There was always desiccated coconut and raisins.
Oh.
And what else?
Custard? There was
something else as well. No.
Whipped cream. Hundreds of thousands.
Tinned peaches. Yuck. Which, by the way, make the best trifle.
Yeah,
and I will brook no dissent on
that. Talking of food, I wish we were, because I'm bloody starving. Helen Sherwood. Last week, Harriet and I were talking about it, because Patricia messaged us and said she'd got lots of nice things in her freezer, and some things in her freezer. She said if I died and they had to cook, because you know Jennifer basically cooked her own funeral dinner.
Yeah.
Patricia said basically as long as people were prepared to work with chicken stock, it would be fine. But if not, they're a bit stuffed because that's all I've got. And we were talking about things stuck to the back of boxes of other things, you know, just sort of white furry things. And Helen Sherwood has sent me her freezer audit. She's got an app that you can, and it says 12 portions of bolognese, 10 sausages, 4 portions of breaded fish, 2 portions of beef bourguignon for 5, or possibly 5 for 2, I'm not sure. Cottage pie for 2, needs potato, in brackets, and Normandy pork for 2. Isn't that well organised and brilliant? There's 3 months of meals in there.
Yeah, the app is... You see, my ex-wife used to try and get me to keep track of... We've got a chest freezer, or now I have a chest freezer, actually. I kept the chest freezer in the divorce.
not the children or the dog.
No, she got the children, the dog, the car. but I got what I really wanted, which was the... That's not true. I should point out... at this point, my divorce has been hugely amicable, and my ex-wife and I still share the car and the dog and the children. It's all 50%, and whoever has the children and the dog has the car. So, but I did keep the chest freezer, mostly because I think she doesn't have space for it. But she used to try and get me to keep track of what we'd got in the chest freezer.
Where's the fun in that?
Because otherwise, I'd go to the supermarket and go, ooh, you know, half-price sausages, and buy 6 packets of half-price sausages and bung them in the freezer, only to find that there were 12 other packets of half-price sausages from 6 months ago already there. But keeping track of it on a piece of paper is very, very, very difficult.
Yes.
So, but an app is a very good idea.
Because some fridges, because when I bought my new fridge, I was marvelling at these insane fridges. You should never have a household appliance that's cleverer than you, I've decided. That's what I... And one of these freezers, it showed you a picture of its inside. So you could see what...
Nah, but there's shit buried in my chest freezer that's never hasn't seen the light of day for...
What, like bodies, human legs and things. Andrew Boone messaged
us. Must be fake crab meat.
And so, Andrew Boone messaged us and said that in his household, they are known as UFOs or unidentified frozen objects.
Mm.
When they go into the freezer, I know what they are.
Yeah,
but a few months later, I look and have no idea if it's minced chili or even something like frozen rhubarb. Makes for some very interesting dinner choices when you finally see what it is.
You can now. I see. I'm a big fan of freezer surprise.
Yeah,
that was a big day in our house when I was growing up, and generally with positive outcomes. There were a couple of disappointments, but generally it was good.
Okay,
but there is a way to avoid this. Was it Andrew?
Yes.
Right. You can go. I think they're commercially produced, or they're produced for commercial kitchens. Little stickers. Which you can put on your Tupperware to say this is whatever and the date on which you froze it, which is always useful to know, even if you subsequently ignore it. And you can just whack these stickers on top of boxes, because scraping them off is a pain. Mm. But if you just whack sticker upon sticker upon sticker upon sticker, eventually they all come off and you start again.
Or you end up with then, a 3-foot sticker and you can't shut the freezer.
Then you know what's in your...
Where's the fun in that? Well, Life should be a lottery. You never know. Is it indeed. Cottage pie?
It's not without its downsides. But
is it the hamster?
If you do want to minimise the risks of freezer roulette...
Ooh, no.
You can do it.
Mm. This is from Becky Sheaves on at Cuckoo Down Farm, who says...
That's a nice name.
Isn't it lovely to have Debbie back? She is acting Adam off the stage, being genuinely discombobulated and grieving. He is so declamatory and wooden. He's my least favourite character, utterly unconvincing. Who would you cut if you could choose one person? He's such a heart sink as soon as he opens his mouth. Justin is such a sly one. I guess spying on Jim and the charging station rebels is at least partly why he's volunteering in the shop, the sneaky old fox. I couldn't for the life of me understand why he was bothering. Maybe he owns Gay Grables too. P.S. Re-spiritual hummus. I'm also the lucky owner of several large canvas tents. Can I ask why does Kate never have problems with leaks, unreliable heating, pin mould, high winds and snapping guy ropes? It's so unfair. I'm currently paying £500 as we speak for a specialist repair to a safari tent zip. Who does all the maintenance for her? Let's just say I don't see her reproofing her canvas single-handed. Oh, that is not a euphemism. All the best, Becky. Thank you very much.
£500 on a zip.
I know.
Crikey. but now we need to be very careful with this, Lucy, because, and I'm not to blame for this. This is you and Harriet. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that up front. When you're negative about the Archers and about the characters,
yes,
people leave nasty reviews.
People from a certain country.
Person leaves nasty reviews.
Who I think. Struggle with some aspects of English humour.
Say you, they don't understand. Why
I don't understand why they listen. They clearly don't like it very much.
They obviously hate it.
Yes. What did they call us? Horrible evil women, or
harpies?
Was that something like that?
Or was that me? Shit. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've read that somewhere. but nonetheless, no, I agree. Dave, Adam is just. Mm. We've discussed this several times now. You have said that he's a very good actor.
Yeah.
When he's not doing this.
Yeah. Well, as so Harriet said, Harriet said earlier, he has to be in round one. Harriet said this. He has to be committed, and he is very, very committed to his character. And he can't suddenly change him now and start being different or whatever, because he is Adam is Adam.
It's clear. It's obviously a decision. Somebody has decided that this is how Adam is, and so that's what he's doing.
I don't think I could cut anybody, because they all have a use. They all drive plot in a different way, and they all work together so beautifully. I don't think there's anybody...
You're only saying that to get the reviews now.
There's no... there's nobody... That possibly, if you have no, I'm just trying to think.
Who's it going to be?
I genuinely wouldn't want to cut any of them. But if you had the baddie, like we can always only have one. So if you had Hazel and Rob both in it at the same time,
yeah,
it would be too much. Mm. But you don't, because when he's in it, she's not, and the other way around. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. They're the villainous characters that you can't have too many of, because they're too similar. Like if you had Joy and Vicky Tucker in it at the same time, that wouldn't work because they're too similar. So you would just have to have one personality type and one plot driver, don't you? Everybody has to push the plot along in or create triangles in a certain way.
Yes, so my initial reaction when that question was posed was, oh God, where do I start?
Mm.
But you're right. I don't want to remove anybody from the village as much as I would. I mean, you've listened to me calling Justin all the names under the sun this week.
Yeah.
And he is, this is shithousery of the highest yeah. order.
Yeah.
And he's going to be found out very, very soon. And I'm going to enjoy it. That's the thing. I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it when he does get found out.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if he weren't there doing this, then I wouldn't get that. So
Yeah, so there is a point to everybody.
There is, absolutely a point. And I'd even have said that, Sausage Boy.
Tom.
Thank you, Tom. See, I didn't really see the point in Tom when I first started listening. But that whole thing with the twins, that was quite...
Yeah.
I thought that was quite, it was really nicely done.
Yeah.
And his character added something to,
yeah.
to the show with yeah. that. So, you know, no... Frustratingly, Lisa, you're right, and I'm not going to get rid of anybody.
Ta-da!
When they ask me, I shall say, no thank you, Kerry. You don't need to take anybody out of the show. For me, at least.
Now, this is from Aimee Sturley, who says, you'll never guess what I just heard listening to the Omnibus episode from October 3rd, 2010. It was Phoebe, she's one of our time travellers, who listens all mm-hmm. over the shop.
Yep.
It was Phoebe interrupting Roy and Hayley with a blast of the vuvuzela that was a gift from the recently returned Kate. When they asked her about it, she said, Mum gave it me. I kid you not. So I guess it wasn't an error in the reading of the script after all. And in case I didn't believe her, she's actually given me a link to where she says it. So it's a thing. It was deliberate. There
right.
we are.
Okay. The Dutch word for vuvuzela is tooter.
Tooter.
And yes. I made the mistake of saying it in the office one day, and apparently I said it in an enormously hilarious fashion.
Oh.
And they have never let me forget it.
Okay.
I already hated vuvuzelas anyway.
And
but now
you hate them even more.
Yes, I do.
Because they were the scene of your
show. So can we not talk about vuvuzelas?
All right, fine by me. Richard Keeling.
Hello, Richard.
Said he reckoned that there was a bit of chemistry between Paul and Josh when they were discussing his potential move. He said, has Josh ever had a girlfriend? Yes, he has. And I don't think there was chemistry. I just think because Paul's a bit one note, which is woo, everything he says kind of sounds vaguely. Because I was thinking earlier,
yes,
you know,
maybe he wasn't coming on to Harrison at all.
No, as a just, vet, you know. You can imagine. Oh, put your dog down. You know, it's got a. It's a slightly odd. If he can't switch out of that gear, I'm not really sure. Although, to be fair, when he was talking to Rory, he was doing his sensible, no, let's just calm down here a little bit.
Yeah, that was quite nice, but that seems to have... That seems
yeah, that
to
we've
have
now turned into Larry Grayson for some reason, yeah. which I yeah. just don't understand. But anyway. And he also says... First, I need to thank you for introducing...
So who was Josh's girlfriend?
I can't remember, but I remember he had one.
All right.
I need to thank you for introducing Tony's Chocolonely to my life. I had never heard of it until your bet a few months ago. I treated
really?
Myself and begrudgingly my husband. That made me laugh, begrudgingly.
Where do they live?
I don't know. To some of their mini Easter eggs. We will not be going back to Cadbury's.
Yes, I've got many Easter eggs for my... I've got Tony's for the kids, so I'm taking them home with me.
I hate Tony the Archer's character. I love the chocolate. Am I the only one finding Jim's reaction to this charging station infuriating? No, you're not. It reminds
yes,
me
are.
Of the time, the Lillian and Linda storyline with the whole Route B at Ambridge, which climaxed with Linda being blown up at Gay Grables. Is something terrible going to happen to Jim? I'm hoping not, because we've just lost
no.
Jenny. No, because Jim and David... have to join forces against the horror that is Justin.
Yes.
Don't they?
That is what... And that's... I think that's what Chelsea has paved the way to.
Yes.
This week.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, I have just realised of who we could remove from the Archers.
Who?
With no negative consequences. Tony.
So Pat
Change
would be a
my
widow.
Mind, Luce.
Pat
Change
would be
a, my mind.
Pat would be a widow.
Mm-hmm.
It would give Helen more to moan about. Tony wouldn't have anyone to play... Lee wouldn't have anyone to play trains with. And that would be sad.
Mm. These are not particularly convincing points.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Mm. You could, yeah.
I mean, it would be...
But then poor Peggy's lost another child.
Any Frank Spencer fans out there would miss him, obviously, but...
Poor Tony. Now this, I'm not going to tell you who this is. This is just from a lady called Alex, right?
Okay. Hello, Alex.
She says, I have been loving your podcast for some time now, and after hearing Harriet talk about how Rex enjoyed telling people he was sad, cold, or hungry, it reminded me of the day last year when I came home late from work to find that my 11-year-old daughter had made a large banner and hung it out of the upstairs front window. The banner read, Mimi is hungry, in large letters, and it greeted me as I pulled into the drive. See attachment. She's taken a photo of it.
No!
To add insult to injury, my husband was actually in at the time.
No.
But she had chosen to make and display this banner rather than ask him for tea. It may interest you to hear...
I can only hope they live in the middle of the countryside and not in a cul-de-sac with lots of other houses directly looking at theirs.
It may interest you to hear that said husband father is Matt Rodriguez Payne. And I suspect that at the time he was shut away in his office creating an Archer's theme tune rather than cooking the kids tea.
For shame, Matthew.
I would also like to add that our friend Paul, who mistook Fee Glover for Harriet, forgot to mention in his message to you that it was his lovely wife Catherine who first recommended your podcast to me, and then I got Matt hooked soon afterwards. I think we should thank her, although sometimes when I have heard the Archer's theme tune coming from his office for the 100th time in one afternoon, I am not so sure. The teenagers in the house also have their doubts and have asked many times, why does Dad keep doing that? And the phrase middle-aged loser has been muttered on several occasions.
They are, oh, that's fantastic. They are definitely, I can imagine, they are taking one for the team now and then. No. Oh, what a brilliant, that's my favourite email for ages, that one. Matt, I think you get one chance at right of reply here. And, it had better be good.
Well, actually, Matt has already made my day by referring to Harriet as Judith Chalmers for the amount of time she spends on holiday. So,
she was. Having met Harriet, I have to say she's considerably less leathery than Judith Chalmers was.
Who did look somewhat like a handbag by the time she
looks like. Well, I'm sitting here next to Bob, the tortoise, and. Yes.
Yeah, there are distinct similarities.
Being reminded of Judith
Chalmers. It's a tortoise in sunglasses. A tortoise with a perm.
I hope she's not a listener.
No. Sorry, Judith.
Sorry, Judith, if you're listening.
She's in the laurels, I should think, with Auntie Cardboard and everyone else. Now we're going to cross to Radio Borsetshire. Did you know that? Are we? Do you know that we're going to do that? No, because
you've got the sketch before you record the show this time.
I know.
We could actually listen to it if we wanted to.
But I can't, I don't know how to put it in.
No, that's fine.
No, all right. Okay. Okay, so we're going to play it now.
Radio Borsetshire.
Colin, it is not long now to Eurovision. I am very excited and also sad, as I waited and waited to get through to get ticket, and even when it connect and I shout, do you know who I am, it disconnect and no ticket. So I am going to have Eurovision party instead. Can you come, Colin? Yes. Oh, no. Now. Hello, this is me, Fabrizio Felpisham, looking like I have just stepped out of the salon, because I have. Today, I have done another broadcasting outside, this time at Bridge Farm, with their exciting new business venture that cost a lot of money and had no business plan. Over to me. Hello, Mrs. Crater and Clary. Thank you for having me at your multimedia visual experience window. Is this mirror, like, on the billy? And I can see you, but you can't see me.
Of course we can see you, Febreze. We're at work, not in custody.
Well, that is sometimes hard to tell the difference.
Oh, and this is not custody, but it is quite milky. Ha ha! You are making cheesy watsits, I think. And you are now an exhibition, so all people can come and look at you and say, hello, hello, what are you doing with all that milk? How is it you are talking to me?
Through the intercom, Febreze. But we like to think of it as a broadcast, don't we, Claret?
No.
Radio Rennet, I'm calling it. Or possibly Way-dio Bridge Farm. We're dickering between the two. Of course, I'm quite at home in a broadcast environment, but Clary's not quite so relaxed. We'll get there, though, won't we, Claret?
No.
Ooh. So, tell me all about the making of the cheesy watsits process, please. The milk come from your goats, what are currently nibbling the mud flappers off my woohoo in the car park, does it?
No, it comes from the Montbelliards. We don't make goat's cheese yet.
Oh, I did not know you could make cheesy watsits out of anything else. In Eurovisia, goats are used for all things. Milk, meat, handbags, dentistry.
Well, at Bridge Farm, we are very much focused on the Montes.
Ah, I went to Canada once. That was very happy time.
Montes, not Mounties. Montbelliards. The milk comes in here and then we add... Oh, I've forgotten the name of that blooming bacteria again, Claret.
Germs. We add germs to it. Then it goes mouldy, we wrap it in cling film, stick a sticker of a cow that looks like a deer on it, and sell it for £7 a quarter in the Bridge Farm shop, while Ellen tries to coerce anyone that's stupid enough to buy it into doing a trip round the edible garden. There's basically 3 fruit trees and some celery. Edible garden. Huh? I'm going to open my compost tape to the public and call it an edible bin. This is all Adam's fault. Oh, you'd think someone as tired as him wouldn't have the energy to keep coming up with his stupid ideas, would you? And every time he does, she has to come up with another one.
Oh, that sound... Clary, are you okay?
She's fine. Step away from the multimedia window, Clary. Go and have a nob-nob and a quick 5 minutes with you take a break. Now... Are there any questions as an uninformed member of the public that you'd like to ask about this heritage and enthralling process?
Yes. Are there sample things with little crackies? I like the little crackies.
No. Don't you want to ask me about how the curds feel and if I smell of cheese?
No, I do not. I am not pervert. I imagine you smell of whatever came with a free gift bag in Underwood mid-range. I do have a question, though.
Go right ahead, Febreze. It's what I'm here for.
Why are your uniforms so tight?
Get out.
So, thank you to me and the lovely ladies at the Bridge Farm Dairy who can tell you about cheesy watsits of all kinds. Listeners will be glad to hear that I managed to rescue my woo-hoo from the goat with minimal damage, but I will still be filing an insurance claim with Mrs. Ellen Archer. Bye!
Radio Borsetshire.
Thank you, Febreze and Susan and Clary.
That was excellent, wasn't it, though?
Yes, huh? That was very good.
Oh, whoever goodness me.
Yes. I think it's the writers, personally. It's all down well, to
them.
Well, anyway.
You know, the writers are quite good, but it's really more in the edit and the acting, I find.
The edit.
Yes.
Now, if you'd like to visit patreon.com, you can look up Ambridge on the Couch and you can support us at any subscription level. If you are a Patreon... then you will get an invitation to our Eurovision evening,
oh,
which
yes.
will not be confused with the coronation with hilarious consequences.
No. Oh, God, that was tedious, wasn't it?
Harriet thought that was an absolute laugh riot and pissed herself
really?
That way. Yep, she loved it.
Ugh.
Ugh.
I mean, that was sub-Frank Spencer stuff, that was.
Well, Harriet was laughing because she said you could. See, she said it was like a shambridge. She said you could see it coming from so far off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And she said it was like they were writing, they're now writing shambridges for her.
Have you ever read that? So there are two weekly comics in Scotland in the Post.
The Brunes.
The Brunes, exactly. Brunes and Irwally. Mm. And the Brunes is entirely based on people getting the wrong end of the stick.
Oh, okay.
So there's been, I don't know, probably 80 or 90 years now of people getting the wrong end of the stick.
Oh, it's just like the archers then.
No, well, exactly. And that was that whole thing with the Coronation Street Eurovision was straight out of the pages of the Brunes, and it just brought back too many bad Dundee-based memories for me. It's just, yeah.
You can also find us on Facebook, on Twitter at @onambridge, Febreze is at @fabulousfebreze, or you can email us all at ambridgeonthecouch@gmail.com.
Yes.
And now, as we play out...
Oh, what have we got this week?
Well, it's a tribute to Harriet Judith Chalmers Carmichael and her many, many, many snowy adventures. Shall I play now? Shall we say goodbye?
We can do. Should I?
Go on then.
Okay. Goodbye, listeners. Thank you very much. And I don't know when I'll be talking to you again. But hopefully next time it'll be a bit more prepared than this one.
Well, bearing in mind you cover when Harriet's on holiday, it'll be next week, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah.
Okay.
Might even have to do a midweek one.
Yeah. She's not ready. She's back next week. Okay. Are you ready? She's not actually on holiday today. I'm taking the mickey. But she had to go off and do something. And because I didn't have the right contact lenses in. Well, I did, but you know the story. That's why it all went wrong. So, yes, goodbye from me too. And we'll play out with our lovely theme from Matt Rodriguez Payne and his annoyed wife,
and
Alex,
his hungry children.
And hungry, starving children. Ready? Go!
I know that is absolute magic. I know I always say that whatever Matt has just done is my favourite ever.
Yeah.
But that genuinely was magnificent. There's no other word for it. And I loved the Ski Sunday scene.
Yeah.
And he'd even got the timpani in there.
Yeah,
I know. Oh, magic. Well done, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
That your children are hungry. If you can produce that on a weekly basis, that it's fine. They'll learn to feed themselves eventually.
Oh, dear. Right. Goodbye, everybody. Love you lots. See you next week.
Goodbye, everybody. I won't be there next week. Unless Lucy makes another terrible, terrible mistake.
Yes.
So, yeah, who knows?
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.